This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
One day only, Thanksgiving Day deals are coming to Lowe's.com. Plus, members get early access to online Black Friday doorbuster deals on gifting favorites, like the still-trending Cobalt Mini Toolbox for just $14.98. Don't miss up to 50% off for one day only at Lowe's.com. We help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change while supplies last.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello, and welcome to Conversations On, where the YMCA of the North engages with local and national leaders about their experiences, their insights, and their aspirations. I'm Henry Lake with WCCO Radio, and today, CEO Glenn Gunderson gets to know Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten Conference and law attorney. Warren played college basketball, attended both graduate business and law schools. He began his law career focusing on NCAA sports law and player career management. A former member of the NFL front office, Warren was later elected as the Big Ten Conference Commissioner in 2020.
Well, welcome, Kevin Warren, Big Ten Commissioner. I am so excited for you to join us in studio. You are a leader for good, who I have admired for a long time. Welcome.
Glenn, thank you. It's good to see you. You look great. It's good to be here and look forward to spending some time together.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, let's start going way back. I'd love to just learn and have our listeners learn a little bit about your childhood, where you've come from. Share a little history.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm the youngest of seven kids. Both of my parents were educators. And so they just demanded excellence from my other brothers and sisters and really focused on raising us in a manner where that they wanted us to be hard workers and be diligent, be transparent with each other, and to make sure that we had big dreams and were willing to work for them. And my dad would always talk about, you know, don't be a person that cuts across the grass. And what that lesson was, you know, don't take shortcuts. And so I'm grateful to grow up with parents who were demanding and very disciplined and to focus on education and put us on the path, hopefully toward success in our lives.
Man, we share that in common. I had both parents in education and a father-in-law in education, and there's something special about those values, right? And I think about the world we're living in now, and maybe some of those values need to come through more clearly for all in community. Hey, you had a setback. I remember reading about it, and I think you shared with me a while back, pretty big accident as a young person.
Yeah.
How did that shape you? What was the story?
I feel confident that I wouldn't be here today, but for that accident, it changed my life forever. I was riding my bike at about 10 and a half years old in our neighborhood, going from our house up to a school to play with some friends. And out of nowhere, a car came, a person who lived in our neighborhood, they were actually looking at homes in our neighborhood, lost control of her car and ran up on the sidewalk going about 40 miles an hour and ran over me. And I was, by the grace of God, I was able to live and survive. And I'm a big believer. That was really my second act in life. I think that's when I really recognized the fragility of life and how fast life goes and how your life can change literally in an instant. And it was very painful. It's been the most pain that I ever felt physically, but it helped me to grow spiritually and emotionally and mentally, and just to develop an overall kind of grit in my life. But I spent a lot of time in traction in the hospital, And then when I finally did come home, I was in a full body cast all the way down to my right tippy toes and three quarters down my left leg with a pole in between. And so when I say I've been flat on my back, I truly had to live that way for the better part of a year. And so there were some dark days that I had during that period, and not, you know, wondering if my bone would heal and my other injuries that I had, and would I walk again, and let alone play sports. And as I said, I just feel like I was protected by the angel of the Lord and had a chance to heal and rehab and work out hard and get back to full speed.
Wow. Yeah, I can say in our relationship, you've been such a mentor on the faith side of the equation. I really appreciate how you live out your faith and how you practice it. And I had no idea how big an inflection point that was for you. And fast forward, the title of your book coming out, Build Your Own Pool. How did that shape, or how did that come to be?
Yeah, it came from the accident, because it was after the accident that I had a doctor who was very skilled, maybe didn't have the best bedside manners, but he was very skilled. And I just learned, that was the first time I really learned that you had to focus on what people said and not how they say it. Because during my exit interview from the hospital, he said, and I asked him, you know, I got to get back into shape. I feel horribly, you know, hadn't really almost moved for a year, lost all of my muscle, you know, tone, even as a kid. And you know, I asked him, when could I start running? And he said, that's going to be a while, but you should really start working on pool aerobics and swimming. And my family did not have a pool in our backyard. And so I spoke with my parents. I knew I was going to get a somewhat of a small settlement for the accident. And I was able to convince my parents to use a third of my settlement to actually pay for and build a pool in our backyard. And that's where the name came from, you know, build your own pool. And really what it talks about is most of the great things in life, when we look at our life, are the things that we really have to buy ourselves. And sometimes that means actually putting down money for it, but sometimes that means just buying them with a process and energy and learning, or paying for them in grit. And that's what I wanted to encourage. I want to encourage all the people who will read the book, is just that, and that's okay. But, and also to be willing to bet on yourself. And you know, I can always tell how serious someone is about a project if they're willing to write a check. A lot of people have great ideas, or have great ideals for us, but they're not willing to write a check. And when someone's willing to write a check, I think it shows kind of where they are. So that's the essence of the book, is that we all need to find those things and opportunities in life where we can build our own pools.
Congrats on working through that content. What an awesome gift to community as that thing rolls out. So we share a passion for basketball too. You came into that game pretty early in life. What talk about your basketball story.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a household of athletes, and my dad had played professional football for a year and played college football at Arizona State. And my brother, oldest brother, was one of the first Black scholarship football student athletes at Stanford. So we were primarily a football family, but one of my sisters actually married John Shumate, who was a first-round draft pick of the Phoenix Suns, and it was right after my accident. And growing around, you know, a professional athlete, and especially being on the Suns, I liked basketball growing up, but I really fell in love with it, and it became a passion. And so I focused on it in high school, and was fortunate to be able to play in college, and it meant so much to me. And I always tell the story that kind of chasing that basketball, that leather ball and a pair of sneakers, has taken me around the world and was able to take me to college and keep me, you know, focused. And so that's why I'm a big believer and a big proponent in collegiate athletics and what it can do, just even from a health and wellness standpoint for someone. And so it really has been a blessing to me.
So now I suppose you got 14 favorite college basketball teams and a few coming along the way, not long, right?
That's right. I love them. I love them all. And it's been some great basketball. I mean, we've had some great early season games. I mean, and to see the Michigan State Gonzaga game on the aircraft carrier, and even Michigan State and Kentucky, and there's going to be some great basketball this weekend. So, you know, I love all of our sports. I really do respect and appreciate all of our institutions, but I'm a big college basketball fan.
Yeah, right there with you. We get a big old bracket in the basement every year, and excited to celebrate March once again as we transition through this season. So, how did you find the law? How did you come to choose a law degree and to work in law?
It was interesting. You know, growing up, my parents, like I said, being both educators, but they really had conversations with me, and they said, Kevin, there are really only three professions that are recession proof. I mean, this is even when I was junior high. And I said, what are those? They said medicine, law, and ministry. And so I actually started off in pre-med. I was a biology major at the University of Pennsylvania when I started. I ended up switching to business. And so I majored in business. And when I got my business degree, it's amazing how these things just impact your life. I only knew one black lawyer and judge in our neighborhood. It was Judge Cecil Patterson, who was a lawyer in Phoenix. And I always just was amazed that he always was so measured. You know, he looked good. He dressed sharp. His car was always clean. He had a beautiful wife, beautiful kids. And they just seemed measured. And he talked about things that I wanted to do, the importance of travel. And then I got a chance to go visit him in college to see him on the bench. And that's what really sparked the interest. But then my senior year in college there, I took a business law course, and our adjunct professor was a gentleman by the name of Mitchell Laird. He was a lawyer in town in Phoenix. And he talked to me about, had I ever thought about, you know, going to law school? And he was the first one to challenge me about getting an MBA and a JD. And then what really sparked is my freshman year at the University of Pennsylvania, one of my dear friends, her brother was a Supreme Court clerk, a law clerk, and he clerked for Thurgood Marshall. And they actually let me look in Judge Marshall's office. I never met Judge Marshall, but to go into the Supreme Court as a young 17-year-old freshman at the University of Pennsylvania, these are things I just heard about. And to look at probably the most prominent African-American lawyer judge of all time, to be able to look in his office, really moved me. So between Judge Patterson growing up, looking at Thurgood Marshall's office, and then Mitchell Laird challenging me my senior year to think about an MBA JD is what propelled me forward to go and study the law at the University of Notre Dame.
Hmm. Fantastic. A couple of good schools there, UPenn and Notre Dame, and a little Grand Canyon as well, right?
Yeah, it was good. So I ended up getting my undergraduate degree from Grand Canyon University. That's helped to really kind of amplify my spiritual foundation and base. So I took a class in Old Testament and New Testament, did my MBA at Arizona State. And then I had a sister, who actually was married to John Shumate, the professional athlete, was living in South Bend because he was coaching for Digger Phelps at Notre Dame. And she had some health issues, and I went to really help the family. So lived in their basement my first year of law school and helped take care of the kids and her and help out around the house as much as I could while I was in law school. Then John ended up getting the head coaching job at Southern Methodist University. So they left. So I stayed in South Bend and recruited my nephew, who was my oldest brother's son, to come to Notre Dame Law School. And so I graduated in 1990, he graduated in 1991, and he has a great practice here in Chicago at Chapman and Cutler.
Wow, interesting. So, hey, what is the story with Chris Zorich? I think you were teaching maybe at Notre Dame, there was a story there that I'd love for you to share with our listeners. We're with Kevin Warren, Big Ten commissioner. Share that story.
Yeah, so after I practiced a couple years, I went back to campus. One of my law professors, Patricia O'Hara, had become dean of student affairs, and so she offered me a job to come back. So I worked in the student affairs department and taught a class in law school, and one of our class mates introduced new Chris and new me and connected us, and he had just gotten drafted by the Chicago Bears, and his mother had passed, and so I just helped him launch the Chris Zorich Foundation and get involved in the community. I ended up negotiating his next contract with the Chicago Bears, but just spent time together, and that's how it was, and us being in the Notre Dame community really made it special. Chris is a wonderful human being. I'm actually, my office is working on getting a dinner on the calendar for us here and hopefully in the next month or so. So it was a blessing to be able to work with him. And he was the reason that I was able to launch my sports agency business.
Yeah. Interesting. Hey, Kevin, I got to know you when you were serving on our YMCA board here in Minneapolis, the YMCA of the North. And I learned so many lessons from you, one of which was just your diligence, your work ethic. I know that it took me getting together with you early in the morning if I was going to catch you. With all that amazing traction you were making with the NFL through the Vikings. And And in Minneapolis, we really went through it, right, in the summer of 2020. And you really were outspoken and stood up in a pretty dynamic way following George Floyd's murder. I'd love for you to reflect for our listeners a little bit about what was going on for you at that time, and then maybe fast forward to some of the work you're taking on with anti-racism at the coalition at the Big Ten. But talk about where you were in summer of 20. What prompted you to get after this and really help us drive a stronger equity dynamic in our communities?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. You know, I was blessed to be able to come to the Big Ten in September of 2019 as commissioner-elect. I was here transitioning for a couple months with Commissioner Jim Delaney. And so January 2nd of 2020 is when I actually formally became commissioner. Then in March, the global pandemic, COVID hit. And then during that summer was a summer of discontent. You know, we had an election, we had the murder of George Floyd, and had dealt with so many of the other things in our life and in society. I was moved so much because it was interesting. I spent a lot of time in 2020 in our home in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And I was having family members and friends call me all the time and said, hey, we're watching CNN and it looks like Minneapolis is burning. And that's when it really struck me, because in our neighborhood in Edina, you know, it was so peace and tranquil and calm, and the trees were beautiful and the birds were chirping and kids riding their bike and you know, all those different kind of things that were going on. And then just to know 15 miles away where George Floyd was murdered, it was like a war zone. And that's when the reality hit me that even though you can be in the same environment, same city, you know, unless you're intentional and diligent and looking for in close proximity of these different issues that are going on, you can miss the opportunity to help kind of right some of the wrongs in society. So I was moved to write a letter, an open letter, and it was picked up by the Library of Congress, and we were able to launch our Equality Coalition and the Big Ten Conference and voter registration initiative. But just to start dealing with some of these issues with race in our society, which ended up morphing into this past summer, the summer of 22, where we took 100 individuals from the Big Ten Conference, from our member institutions, coaches, student athletes, administrators, to Selma, Montgomery, Alabama, to basically reenact the march from Montgomery to Selma. But again, to put it into context, we were able to do it via bus. But I challenged a lot of the people on the trip is, what are you willing to walk 54 miles for over a 5-day period? And it was just for them to have a right to vote. And then we were able to walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and do all those incredible things from a civil rights standpoint for all of us, even our young student athletes, but for us to recognize the, you know, the complex nature of life and the importance of doing the right thing and getting over barriers regarding race and different class systems, but that we're blessed to have the world that we live in, but we need to make sure that we never take advantage of it and take it for granted.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments on equity and equality and the work you've done at the Big Ten. And I'm curious for you, I always see you as such this indomitable leader, so impassioned. And what might you reflect on in terms of the things you've gone through relative to race? How did race show up for you, either as a young person or a college student? Did you ever have issues where you were made to feel less than, or you were impacted negatively, adversely?
Yeah, you know, yes, very regularly. And my stories is also a little bit different than people read about in the book, but may not recognize is that my mother is, you know, half Mexican-American. So my grandmother, Ramona Padilla, was actually born and raised in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico. And so I'm 25%, you know, Hispanic and probably 25% American Indian and 50% Black. But the reason why the Hispanic item is interesting, my grandmother was a maid and lived in the projects in Phoenix. For all the people that know Phoenix, she lived in the Mexican projects and, you know, as it was called on basically 19th Street and Buckeye, really rough area. And so, you know, I was fortunate, and I say fortunate, to spend the majority of every weekend in the projects with my grandmother. And so that's when I really started to recognize racism at a level. You know, I didn't know it in my neighborhood because it was an all-Black neighborhood. But when I would go there, and especially when I would go on visits with my grandmother, she was, as I said, a maid and clean homes. I remember I was cleaning a home one time in Paradise Valley, Arizona, which is an absolutely beautiful area. And one of her clients, who she had had for probably 20 plus years, actually threw my glass away. I asked for a drink of water. And when we finished, you know, when, you know, from a maid standpoint, you go and make sure, that's when you had shag carpet, you had to make sure the carpet was raked so it would stand up when the people were there. And you take out the garbage and make sure everything is, you know, the sink are cleaned out, and you check the garbage one final time. And I checked it and noticed my glass was in there, and I thought it was just an accident. Maybe it was broken. And I felt bad and took it back out. And then before we left, then it was thrown in away again. And then I recognized that, you know, that was because I'd asked for a drink of water, and it really hit me. It disturbed me. My grandmother never had a license, never flew on a plane, never drove a car. But I remember taking, you know, the bus. We would take the bus back to her projects, and I was really disturbed. I didn't understand it. And it didn't make sense. It was after my accident, so I was still trying to get my body in shape and didn't really feel good, you know, about myself. And then for that experience to happen, and I didn't share that story for literally over 40 years, because fast forward, when my wife Greta and I moved back to Phoenix in between my time at the Lions and then coming to the Vikings, is I was adamant about moving into Paradise Valley. And I remember we had this realtor who was trying to convince us driving around one day that you can get so much for your money in Mesa or Chandler and Tempe or Ahwatukee. And I said, I want to live here. And it was at that moment I shared that with Greta, because she asked me, like, why are you so passionate? I said, this is the enclave of where this happened. And it was almost for me to, as a thank you to my grandmother, to say that even for, you know, young black mixed blood kid who was black and Hispanic, who grandmother was a maid, who she lived in the projects, that if you really lean into your life and pray and trust God and do the best you possibly can, truly, I have not lived a perfect life. I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, but I do the best I can every single day, try to help folks and be diligent and lean into it. You can build a beautiful life for yourself. Yeah. And so, you know, I felt it many times along the way, but when it comes to race and racism with me, not others, I'll stand tall for them. But for me, I just tuck them in the deep parts of my brain, and hopefully maybe book 3 or 4 that I'll be able to share all those. I have them all written down, but yeah. I'm just conscientious of not using those as a crutch to have anyone to feel, you know, feel for me. So I just kind of tuck them in my brain, and they give me extra, super extra dedicated energy on a lot of the issues that I face every day when race has come into it from a business context. But I don't share it at all, and probably will take 99% of them to my grave.
Wow. Thank you for that candor. And I think our listeners learn from these experiences, right? And I'm just grateful that you're willing to be candid in that respect. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about leadership. You come into the Big Ten replacing, you know, an iconic commissioner, yep. Right? Jim Delaney served for a long time, really built the Big Ten into something special, and now you're taking it to a whole new level. But how do you replace a legend like that? And you being a legend in your own right, what are the ways in which you take an organization forward when you've had a strong leader like that, that you're succeeding?
Glenn, that's a great question. And what I did, I think the thing that helped me the most is being the youngest of 7 kids, you know, in the household. My parents taught us all, and they would tell me all the time, to be a great leader, you need to be a great servant. And you just can't lead to lead, but you got to learn how to serve to lead. And so I think growing up youngest of 7 kids, my accident really humbled me. And then I'm a big note taker, and every organization that I've worked in, I've studied the top leaders there and taken notes over the years and said, okay, here's what I learned at this organization. Here's what I learned at this law firm. Here's what I learned at this franchise. And would say that if I ever gotten a point of chance to lead, here's some things that you know, what do I need to do more of? And what do I need to stop doing more of? I was in an organization where we had an iconic leader who retired and someone took over. And I just watched how this new person that took over, everything was in place and in order. It was a highly successful business. But instead of building on top of that, they almost became offended by it and did everything that they possibly could to to diminish that leader, the work of the prior leader had done. And I made a note to myself, you know, never do that, almost amplify and build it. Now, quite naturally, changes have to occur and people recognize that. I'm going to put my spin on it. You know, I see the world differently than a lot of other people. And I expect no different than the Vikings or any other place. The people who followed me there, they should put their spin on it. It's just like our children. They should put the spin on our family name, but just make sure it's a positive spin. And so coming in here was really important for me to embrace the 31 years that Jim Delaney had spent here. And to think that he took over the conference in 1989 in his 40s and to be here for 31 years, you know, during the late 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, how things have morphed into where they are. It truly is amazing for him to be able to have done that. So what I try to do is to recognize the history and tradition of the Big Ten. This is over 125-year old organization. We've only had five commissioners in the history of the Big Ten, and to try to do everything I possibly can, as my parents taught me, to leave every situation better than it was when you found it. And that's what I've tried to do here. And hopefully the other five commissioners, you know, John Griffith and William Reed and Tug Wilson and Wayne Duke and Jim Delaney would all be able to look at me and say that you carried the mantle forward in a way that had great style, grace, and class, and you made it better. And then I hope I join their group one day to be able to look at the person who replaces me, and that they can continue to carry this conference forward into a positive manner.
Man, talk about carrying the mantle. So we got to talk a little bit about adding UCLA and USC, and yeah, I'm sure some other exciting things to come. You know, as a born and bred Minnesota fan, I cannot wait to see games at Pauley or at the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum. Right. That is going to bring so much enthusiasm, I think, to the fan base. And there's a general excitement about the Big Ten. Share what you're seeing, you know, all these moves towards bigger and bigger power mm-hmm. conferences. What's the landscape look like? How's this NIL thing going to work out? I think the listeners would love to get your perspective on you know, what it's like in this realm right now.
Yeah, this is a time of disruption in this industry. And so many times in life, people fear disruption. And I've been, you know, my life was disrupted at 10 and a half years old. And I'm a big believer that but for that disruption, as I said earlier in this podcast with you, I wouldn't be here. So disruption absolutely created great energy and focus and determination in my life. So disruption is good. And I think that's what you're going to see in college athletics for the next couple years. That's what you look, what we're dealing with in the world and in the stock market and the race relations, is we're in a time of discontent, of disruption, but I think greatness is going to come out of that. So I just thought from, you know, adding schools that you have to look at this world holistically. And there was a big gap for us. You think Western Nebraska, there wasn't any Big Ten footprint. One of the things that we studied on, even when I got here, is that the number one location for our graduates out of our Big Ten institutions who don't stay in the Midwest is Southern California. So there's already a base, you know, there in Southern California that exists. And so it was really important for us to welcome new members into the family, but who had similar ilk, who highly academic schools, both USC and UCLA are high academic schools. They're both members of the AAU, high academic and athletic history, you know, rich traditions. And then their alumni. When you start talking about Pauley Pavilion and the Coliseum and the Rose Bowl and, you know, all the people, Arthur Ashe, Jackie Robinson and Stan Smith and Lou Alcindor, Cheryl Miller and Jackie Joyner Kersee. And I mean, just think of all the folks. And then business-wise, you know, Steven Spielberg and, you know, the list goes on, the many Heisman Trophy winners and the coaches. And to be able to welcome them into our family, and just even watching the game the other night between USC UCLA was really, you know, exciting and intriguing. And so I'm focused to make sure that we do everything we can to integrate them properly here, integrate their student athletes, and continually build a strong conference as we look forward. And all the things you mentioned, the transformation committee, the future of the NCAA, name, image, and likeness, you know, we're in a time of disruption. And I think those conferences, I have a mantra here at the Big Ten, we want to lead and not be led. And in order to do that, you have to be prepared. So it's a blessing to work in this realm every single day.
I love that. Lead and not be led. And that, and just letting that momentum carry forward, right? Like what I'm hearing you say is, as a leader, you're embracing disruption. And I think so many times change becomes kind of a fear mantle for leaders versus mm-hmm. something to embrace. So thank you for that that clarity and that lesson. So where do you see us now as a community as we're going forward? I mean, you know, a couple of years since that summer of great unrest, and we at the Y have been really, really driving at an equity-based message, trying to drive cultural competence, trying to bring the community along to really think in humanitarian terms, serving all. Where are we in this dynamic right now? What do you see as opportunities for the Y, for leaders like me to carry this mantle forward?
I think where we are is that this is a time, just what you said, for great leaders to become even more powerful, to have a voice to amplify it. You know, it's so easy for all of us to look to the next person to take the lead role. You know, I'm a big believer, you know, even if I'm walking down the street and see a piece of trash on the ground, pick it up. And because we're in this together and it's not someone else's problem. I think this is all of our issues that we're dealing with, and we need to come to the table with solutions. I'm a big believer. So many people, and you learn it in law school, your first year in law school, the one thing they want to teach you is, one, to learn a new language in law, but two, how to spot issues. And I remember our professor first day said, if you walk away out of your first year learning a new language in law and how to spot issues, you had a successful year. But so many people live their lives as just issue spotters. They just point out all the issues that we have, but they don't come up with any solutions. So, you know, immature people can spot issues. And so I think what you have found a lot in our communities and our leaders, they've spotted the issues. And that's great. That's the first step toward greatness. But now what we need is leaders who can not only spot the issues, but who can go and solve the issues. And those are the people, those are the businesses that do well. Those are the communities that thrive. Those are the teams that are successful, is that they spot the issues, but then they attack the issues and solve the issues. And so, Glenn, from your position, especially with the Y and your voice and the panache that you have in the Twin Cities community, and the Twin Cities community is such an unbelievable place of people, corporate base, and is that it's time to now move on from spotting the issues, but really start solving some of these issues. And so I just encourage you and pray for your strength to be able to take a leadership role. And so many times in life, I mentioned this, you know, recently, my sister took me up on one of the tallest buildings in New York as a kid, right after my accident. And I remembered when we were walking in the building, it was like a nice calm day. But then when we got up to the top, then it was really windy. And I was almost, you know, fearful to stand near the edge. And the reality, you know, hit me that, it was windy. It's windy at the top. It's lonely in these positions. A lot of times people like you and I don't have others to talk with. But the view is beautiful and the impact is beautiful. And so I just encourage you to be strong, be steadfast, work hard, have grit, not only spot those issues, but go and solve them and live your life on a daily basis. Because all that we have is 1,440 minutes. That's all that we have, regardless of our color, our race, our blood type, our health, our family, our financial situation. We all have the same amount of time. And then I would just challenge you that there's so many great things that can be done in one single minute. And there's some bad things that can be done in a single minute, but stay on the side of goodness and not only issue spot, but become a solution-based leader.
Great suggestions. Hey, who are the leaders that really moved you, motivated you, maybe a mentor or mentors that you know, you look to as really influential in your leadership life?
You know, I look at people who, both black and white people, but, you know, I'll tell you right now, I was blessed at MBA school. I worked in the admissions office, and we would have these guest speakers, and we had Bob Crandall, the former iconic CEO of American Airlines, came in for a speech, and I was chosen to be his host. Mm. And that changed my life. You know, just driving around in my little Toyota Corolla, and I remember I was so proud to wash and keep it clean and put gas in it, but to drive around him and to think a CEO of that magnitude allowing me to drive, you know, him was really powerful. But then to watch him and how he treated people, how he prepared, and then to watch him speak, you know, gave me a sense of of you know, even like how American Airlines was built. And so he's someone, and I probably wrote him a note after that, but I never had any further communication with him. But every time I was on an American Airlines flight on Sunday, and I thought about him. And it's a reminder to me that you never know how an impact like that could have to young people. But he was the first CEO of a Fortune 150 company that I had met. I'd never been around one before.
Yeah.
But he motivated me. My parents motivated me. But then I've met some other people. Tony Dungy, to be the first, you know, black man to win a Super Bowl. Ken Chenault, who's an iconic CEO at American Express. I got a chance to connect him during the Vikings deal that we were working on in 2004. He's still a friend to this day. He's someone I really lean on, you know, for advice and counsel, because I always like the people. I'm not a big believer in people giving me advice who read about advice in a book and they're sharing it with me. I want people to have lived it. And so I know Tony Dungy lived it. I know Ken Chenault lived it as a black man in the world that we live in. And so not only can they give me good family and corporate and business advice, but we can talk candidly about what it means to be a you know, an African-American man in this complex world that we live in. And both of those gentlemen, Coach Dungy and Ken Chenault, never make excuses. You know, they do more than just spot the issue. Then they come up with solutions. So those are people that I really, you know, lean on a regular basis.
Yeah, and little did that American Airlines CEO know the leader you'd become. Yeah. Kevin Warren, Big Ten commissioner. What brings you hope?
Young people. And every time I have a conversation with, you know, individuals in college, our student athletes here at our Big Ten schools and elementary schools, and even young people, just the vitality and the vibrance of what young people have, you know, brings me hope. I just believe in people. And I believe that the more that we can break down walls and visit each other churches and work together and sit side by side and travel with each other, we recognize that we're the same. We got the same bone density. We have the same blood. Our eyes work the same way. And, you know, we enjoy the same things. We want the same things in life. When you talk to people, we want the same things in life. If we have kids, we want them to be healthy and to have good, healthy lives and do well. That's all we want, you know. And so I've recognized the more that I'm around people, the more I recognize that we all have the same interests. And I think the more that we can get beyond color, do what's right, push ourselves, strive to leave the world a better place. And, you know, it's interesting. Both of my parents would always talk about, you know, everything you do, every piece of work that you touch, you know, do it like it's going to come back and benefit one of you, either you, your significant other, your children one day. You know, you've heard those stories about the person working at a construction company and was toward retirement. And the owner said, hey, I got a special person that I want you to design and build a house for. And, you know, the construction worker, you know, thought it was just one of his owner's, you know, friends. So he did a good job, but didn't do a great job. And then at the end of the construction project, he turns around and hands him the keys and said, this house is for you. And he recognized, like, wow, I was blessed with building my own house. And if I would have known that, yeah, maybe I would have measured this a little bit differently, or would have put, you know, this type of floor or countertop in there, even though it would have taken a little bit more because I was building it for me and my family. And that hit me recently. You know, we were actively involved in Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center. And little did I know, when we were designing that and thinking about how, you know, from a medical standpoint, we could service all of the wonderful people in the Twin Cities. Little did I know that my son Powers would have a surgery there recently, you know, on his foot. And it really resonated with me that I was said to myself, I'm so glad that I designed this for all the individuals who come here to need to get help. But little did I know that it would be here to be designed to have such a critical role in the healing of my son. And that's a reminder to just to always do your best, because you never know what you put into the atmosphere that will come back in a position, and that may bless you or may bless your kids, or maybe three or four generations down the road that someone, you know, says that, yeah, you know, your family was had an integral part in building this environment. And I just want to make sure whatever ecosystem I'm involved with, that I build it in a manner that if people that I care about, whether family or friends or the benefactor of working in that environment that I would be proud to know that I did it the very best I possibly could.
Kevin Warren, I'm so grateful for your leadership lessons. I know you'll continue to spotlight solutions and come up with amazing solutions. And we look forward to following the success of the Big Ten. And I'm just really grateful for our time together. Thank you.
Well, I'm grateful for you, and just keep leading, and stay strong, keep working with integrity and transparency, and be gritty. And I'm so grateful that you're for what you've done in the Twin Cities area, really around the country. I'm always here for you. So good to see you, and it's good to see you last week. And good leadership, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Take care. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Conversations On with the YMCA of the North. Engages with local and national leaders, helping to inspire you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday Doorbuster Deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool Top Load Washer or Midea Top Freezer Refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time Doorbuster Deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
True North has something truly fast and friendly. Introducing the True Rewards mobile app. Sign up to get instant access to member-only offers and in-store coupons. As a True Rewards member, track your club status, find a store, and redeem exclusive offers all in one place. Join today and save 25 cents per gallon on your first fill-up and save 5 cents every day. Savings are stackable with Shell Fuel Rewards. Download now from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.